Hi, everybody. Welcome to a packed Friday filibuster panel of all-stars. Boy, you remember the Battle of the Network Stars, Mac McIntyre?
Oh, yes, I do.
Yeah, it's just
a bad show.
It was a bad show. I just have a, just for some reason, I have an enduring memory of David Letterman paddling a canoe in one of those.
Rheta Spitt versus Raymond Burr in the ring.
So anyway, there's Mac McIntyre.
I can do.
Daryl Loomis.
Hello.
Eric Asherslager.
Hello.
And in a crossover event, Clark Douglas.
Hi.
So thanks for joining us, Clark. We appreciate the guest chair that you're filling here. So
always a delight to be here.
Good. Good. Maybe you can add some, I don't know, some class to this band of ruffians and beatniks.
You came to the wrong guy for that.
Okay. Let's get right into it. In fact, Clark, we'll kick it off with you. Why don't you anything you've been up to recently? Any movies you've seen? Any TV shows you're watching? Any scores that are grabbing you?
Well, let's see. On the movie side of things, I guess the most recent thing I watched was The Bourne Legacy.
Yes.
That was a bit of a chore to get through, honestly. And I didn't really know what to expect from it. I'd been a fan of the previous three Bourne movies. And, you know, not a super fan or anything, but I enjoyed them. And this one just seemed completely unnecessary. The whole thing could have been condensed to a 10-minute prologue for a better movie, but no, it was rough.
Not a lot of action, I heard, too.
Well, no, not a lot, but what's there is pretty bland and poorly directed.
See, I like Jeremy Renner, too.
I do, too, and I mean, the cast is incredible. You've also got Edward Norton and Rachel Weisz and some of the folks from the previous movies. David Strathairn's in there, but nobody really gets anything to do of interest, so one of the more significant wastes of a talented cast I've seen in a while.
Yeah, so how long was it? Is it 2 hours plus?
Yeah, it's about 2:15.
Okay, but does it feel long? That seems pretty long for which should be a, I don't know, breezy action film.
But yeah.
That's pretty much the norm these days, though.
I guess, right?
Yeah,
I guess.
About, yeah, for big event movies.
Not even that. I mean, we're in the world now where Judd Apatow comedies are running two and a half hours.
Yeah, whatever happened to the 70-minute comedy?
It's been reduced to, like, the date movie stuff, and that's too long for those.
Right. Those are, like, 110 minutes.
So it's a lose-lose.
How long should a date last?
It's lose-lose. No, I'm talking about the actual date movie, the movie called Date Movie.
Oh, yeah.
Which is terrible.
Yeah.
Well, since you mentioned it.
Yes.
I also had a chance to catch the new Judd Apatow movie.
Yeah, I caught. I watched.
How is that?
I saw the first 30 minutes, and I lost interest, and my wife lost interest.
I made it all the way through, but
yeah?
I found it a little bit of a step down from his previous stuff. There's still some funny moments.
Yeah. But I don't know. Like, you know what it was? Like, so this is 40. That's the movie. It's with Paul
right.
Rudd. And, like, my red flag was going up just, like, really, 2.5 hours of the Leslie Mann character, you know, who was just kind of really, you know, knocked up. You know, it was fine for the role she played, but it was pretty rough. And then it just didn't seem like, I don't know, it didn't seem like people were following, like, the actual rules of, I mean, do people really act like that? That's my question, you know? I mean,
well, it really wasn't as relatable a movie as I think it wanted to
yeah,
be.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good answer.
And part of that, the movie keeps going on about the financial woes of these characters and how everything's about to fall apart for them. But they're so obviously wealthy that even if they, you know, crash hard, they're still going to be doing far better than almost anybody else.
And why is Leslie Mann's, I mean, she is a very attractive woman. What is she complaining about, too?
Right.
You know, she looks at, I guess if Megan Fox is working in your store, I suppose there could be some comparison. But, you know, she's not. She's a very – I don't know. They're just a lot of like, – and what husband wants her – wants his wife to stare in his anus? I just don't understand. So, I don't know. I mean, it just was not – I don't know if how it goes. I don't know how it wraps up, Clark, but it was just – I didn't find it funny, and it wasn't endearing, like, and relatable, as you said, enough to kind of carry on the, like, the really kind of stark. There's a few jokes that were funny, but I don't know if I just attribute that to, like, your the standard operating Paul Rudd delivery, which tends to be gold, you know?
Well, there's that. And I mostly enjoyed a lot of things around the edges of that movie. I thought Albert Brooks was really funny in his role as Paul Rudd's father. I enjoyed him a lot. Some of the other supporting players that turned up. But, yeah, probably Judd Apatow's most disappointing feature to date for me.
Okay. All right. Daryl, what about you? What's happening?
Well, I'm glad there's a big cast because I don't have a whole hell of a lot. I've been continuing speaking to Judd Apatow, continuing with watching Freaks and Geeks, which got about 5 episodes left. And I remember why I lost interest in it now, even though the episodes are still very solid. I remember why I lost interest in the show when it first aired, and it gets into some really intense moralism that I just cannot deal with. And I think that's maybe my big problem with Judd Apatow. Even though I think he's talented and can really get casts together, can really mine talent, there's an intense moralism that really bothers me about the whole thing. And so I'll finish it out. I got like 5 episodes left, but
yeah. Remind me, are you rewatching this or watching this?
I'm rewatching it. I watched it when it aired, and hadn't seen it since. But I remember distinctly a few episodes in, starting to get a little bit annoyed by the messaging that's continually being pressed, and it's not always the same message, but there's always a message. And messaging isn't really my jam, as it were.
But just remember, you have Carlos the Dwarf to look forward to.
Right, of course. Carlos. So, it's a good show. It's well made, and I mean, he minds a cast. And this is the case, you know, if you're talking about 40-year-old Virgin or Knocked Up or any of his movies that I've seen, he really knows how to put a cast together.
Well, and more than that, he knows how to like set them on paths to stardom as well.
Yeah, right? Well, in that, and you, even in a few episodes ago, Rashida Jones shows up for her big episode where she's a bully,
right?
You know, and then you know is now like she's not a huge star, but
Shia LaBeouf is in that movie too as the mascot.
Yeah.
And in that show, rather, yeah, so.
Yeah. I mean, there's every episode. There's somebody. Not one of the main cast members. There's somebody who's in there who's become something at least reasonably big, and that's impressive. And I laugh sometimes.
But it doesn't sound like you cry.
I'm way past the point of crying.
Oh, I got you. So yes, you're right.
I've turned into a cold, hardened bastard.
Yes. A rotted acorn beats within your chest right now.
It's okay. I'm okay with that. I can live with myself. So there's that. And then the other thing that I'm really happy about reading earlier today was not necessarily – I guess happy but a little bit skeptical that the Arrested Development Season 4 has been extended.
Like extra episodes added to it?
Extra episodes, yeah, between 12 and 15, depending on how much Mitchell Hurwitz decides to put together.
Wow.
Which could be great, but it could also mean that they're going to stretch themselves too thin. We'll see.
We'll see. But
was the initial order 10?
The initial order was 10, yeah.
Okay.
But just think how glorious the 22 episodes were for the first season. You know, and the 18 in the second season. They're all
and
glorious.
Like the 14 in the third season?
That's right. I know. But it's all glorious. It's all glorious. Do we have any confirmation that Carl Weathers will be coming back?
Carl Weathers will be coming back. I believe that's been confirmed.
Wow.
He's going to teach us more ways to make stew.
All right. We have to move on because we will digress immediately.
Yeah.
An hour and a half for our favorite Arrested Development lines. So we must move on. So are you also is that it?
That's it.
Right,
I got nothing.
Mac, what do you got?
Let's see. Made it out to the movies this week. Had some hours to kill, so I saw Anna Karenina.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
not really Frankenweenie, is it?
Not quite. No, a little different than that. The movie's interesting. It does some very sort of odd creative stuff. For like pretty much the whole first part of the movie, it's, you know, it's Leo Tolstoy, it's the Russian epic, but they've set the whole thing inside a giant theater so that it's all playing out on a stage and the camera turns around and you can, like, see where the audience is supposed to sit. You can see into the wings as if they're living inside this big theater as they're acting out their lives.
Sounds like it was made in the 70s.
Well, yeah, it's all very, like, odd and experimental. There's a part where the characters say, well, I'm going to go outside, and then, but quote-unquote outside is just he walks backstage, and he's walking around, like, among all the stagehands and stuff.
I read something about how that was actually a budget thing, that apparently they didn't have as much money as they thought they would, so somebody came up with this notion of putting everything on a stage.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's a major... That is a major miscalculation of the fun show.
Right.
Like, you can't shoot outside. You think that would pop up in the budget. Yeah, everything's great. We just can't shoot outside.
Trees are expensive.
That makes sense. because, you know, they do some clever things. Like, you know, the two characters say, okay, they're at the office. And they say, well, let's leave this office and let's go to the restaurant. They leave. And then all the extras in the office, they all change into their, you know, waiter outfits, and they move all the furniture around and change it into the restaurant. And then those same two characters re-enter the scene. And so they do stuff like that.
Very strange.
You know, they do go outside for location shooting when they're at, like, you know, later in the story, you know, Anna, you know, falls from grace and she loses all her wealth and privilege and everybody's at the farm. And, you know, when they're outside and they're at the farm, then they're living off the land, and that's all location shooting. So it's kind of they're doing a haves versus have-nots thing, but they're not really consistent with it. So
maybe
sometimes
they realize
they
didn't have as much money halfway through.
That makes sense, because it gets hard to follow, like, where the characters are in any given time. So it's an interesting experiment, I guess, but I'm not sure they pulled it off.
And did you notice when they replaced Jude Law with Scott Baio?
I heard it ends up as a found footage movie.
That's right. The shift to the POV, you know, the audience POV, is pretty drastic. All right. Anything else, Mac?
That should do it, I guess. I'm this close to bailing on Assassin's Creed 3. I'm just getting killed over and over and over.
They don't have cheat codes, do they?
Not anymore. I don't think they've become a thing of the past.
You should get the Game Genie for the...
Game Genie, or call the Nintendo Helpline. $2 a minute. All right, Eric, what have you got up your sleeve?
All right, well, I want to see The Hobbit at some point. And so this seemed like as good an excuse as any for me to finally get around to watching my extended edition Lord of the Rings Blu-ray set that I've had forever. It was one of those things where, you know, I've saw the movies in the theater. Dave, you and I saw Two Towers together for what was, I think, probably my second or third time. Whatever reason, like, when the movies first came out, I saw, like, the first two a couple times. And by the time Return of the King came out, I think I just saw it the one time in the theater. And then I got the extended edition DVD set for Christmas that year or the next year. And then I always said, okay, well, I want to watch it, but I want to watch them all. If I'm going to watch this, I have to watch them all. And that basically meant that I was never watching them again.
Right.
Yeah, like 28
hours of movie.
Right, exactly. And then, you know, and then I had the ability to watch high def movies, and I was like, well, I can't watch the DVDs now. I got to wait till I get the Blu-rays, because I, you know, at this point I just have to wait. So I finally got it, and then it was just, okay, I have it, and now I'm not going to watch it. So now that I have an excuse.
Gotcha.
Okay, I have to, you know, catch up on the stuff that happened after the movie that's going to be on, out now. I don't know.
You need a doctor to diagnose you with something. It requires you to sit and watch fantasy films for 20 hours straight, you know?
So I finally decided just to start. Just, you know, you gotta just open up the case, pop the disc in, and just go. So that's what I did. And so far I've watched The Fellowship of the Ring, the extended edition. Again, eventually I will get to stuff that I've never seen once I get to Return of the King that will, you know, all the extended stuff will be new to me, which will be interesting. Because a lot of what I'm watching now I've seen, you know, a bunch of times. Although it's been a long time. I haven't seen any of the Lord of the Rings movies, you know, since maybe 2002, 2003. So it's been quite a while. And, you know, it's still good. It's a little weird to watch it, I don't know, 10 years later, because there are parts that are really, really spectacular, and there are parts that are just kind of silly in that way that only fantasy movies can be silly, and weird, like, slow motion shots that are kind of last a little bit longer than I remember and that kind of thing. Maybe that's the extended version, but I'm still really enjoying it. I'm surprised at how well the CG holds up. There are a few kind of iffy places, but for the most part, it's still pretty good.
Yes. So, is The Hobbit viewing this weekend? Is this going to be breaking news?
No, probably. Well, I don't know. Who knows? We'll see.
Nice.
I still have, what, like, I don't know, like 8 hours.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
That's good point. And, you know, because I have, you know, a job and family and
good point.
Need to sleep, I'll probably be watching it over the next 2 weeks. So I watch like half hour at a time. It's a really great way to watch stuff.
It's like watching a whole season of 24, you know? Just parse it out like that. All right. Well, let's see. For me, what do we got? And I will say that this past episode of Parks and Recreation I thought was very good.
I thought it was very funny.
Probably not coincidentally, there was good, solid Ron stuff. Tammy showed up again. Yeah. Leslie kind of was, you know, at her strength. You know, there's some – the Jerry stuff was funny. So it was a – I don't know. Ron and the Woodmaker's Award was fantastic.
Yeah.
Ron's
his
really
giddiness.
Excited.
Yes, his giddiness over that. And that shot of that guy who was the legend. You know? I don't
Duke
know.
Duke Silver reappeared.
Yeah, Duke that Silver. Like, and that was like generally that was pretty heartfelt. You know, that was pretty good. So
yeah, it was strong. It was very strong.
But, good episode, kind of – kind of a real throwback to the Parks and Rec stuff, you know, that I really like. And I thought, you know, I thought Leslie was really funny running interference with Tammy, which was, Tammy sitting at the table, you know, facing Ron, pulling an Anne Hathaway, if you will. Yeah, that was.
Ron's acceptance speech was kind of wonderful, too.
Yes, that's right. So just, good to see that. That show get a little bit back into form. So hopefully that moment.
Still don't know how many legs it has left in it.
Right.
But
we'll see.
It was a good return to form.
It was a good return to form. I certainly laughed well. And maybe that's just because I watch it after The Office, which has become so horrible.
Oh, it's horrible. It's
that
so
anything
horrible.
It will be. I mean, I'm plodding through, but it. I mean, I. How many weeks do we need to spend on Oscar's affair with Angela's husband? I mean, it's probably been like 6 weeks or so.
Although, in concept, is funny. It's just...
Maybe as a two-episode thing? Three-episode?
Yeah.
I don't know. So.
But the problem is that it's not funny. Like, they take it into a very dark, serious place.
Yeah, that's
place.
A good point. Yeah, like, right.
There's nothing about it that's funny at all.
It's true. It's not, yeah, that's depressing. Kind of and,
yeah, the yeah. end comic result is Oscar and Angela getting along.
I guess. And I guess. Like,
which
but
is bizarre.
But it's ham-fisted, too.
It's completely ham-fisted.
Like, you know,
and then you've got, like, crazy absent Andy.
Right, shooting
and,
a movie.
And I guess, right, exactly.
And they're writing around that by having his girlfriend, which is, like, the only kind of... Because, I mean, Jim and Pam are incredibly boring. And, you know, they've been boring for years now. So then, you know, Andy and Aaron kind of seem kind of fun. So now that's being subverted with... You know, at Helms shooting Hangover 3 or whatever. So
yeah, and this other guy who's horning in on their relationship, who yeah. I couldn't pick out of a crowd if he had a name tag.
Who are you? Who cares? Screw you! Yeah, we don't. I mean, who cares? So
the most completely boring person.
And I think like of all the things that kind of fell apart when Steve Carell left, you know, one thing that just kind of jumps out is like. The supporting characters, as fun as they can be, aren't that interesting to carry a show comedic.
That's why they're supporting.
So, like, you know, so being focused on Michael, that was great. And Dwight playing off Michael was good. But everything, I don't know. It just, yeah. I mean, I'm not telling anyone that people don't know already, so.
All I know is I can't wait for Community's Christmas episode in May. I mean, that's going to be something special.
Or Christmas 2013. I mean, that's still an outside box.
Sure, they could push it back.
All right, so let's move on to stuff we've got coming up for the site. So, Clark, right back to you. Anything of interest?
Well, let's see. Stuff I've just finished writing about. Aside from the Bourne Legacy, I watched the 1962 musical Gypsy with Natalie Wood and Rosalind Russell and Carl Malden, which was more entertaining than – what's that?
Carl Malden in a musical.
Yes, not doing a whole lot of singing, but a little bit.
It was
a little more entertaining than I expected it to be, honestly. Not a classic or anything, but that was kind of fun. The second season of Star Trek: The Next Generation on Blu-ray has been consuming much of my week.
How does it hold up?
There are still some clunky episodes, but it's definitely a noticeable step forward from season one. And the transfer looks beautiful. I think season two is the first season that contains some truly great Next Generation episodes, with stuff like Measure of a Man and Q Who, and some of those are really great. But it's obviously still kind of finding its footing. But yeah, that's been what I've been working on largely this week.
All right, nice, Daryl.
My stuff this week is a delight to me that will basically interest nobody.
All right. No, typical Daryl Loomis.
Yeah, I've got an old Mario Bava Italian horror movie on Blu-ray that I've been watching, that I was watching when this started, that looks good but not great, and is also much more terrible than I remember it the last time I saw it. And then I've got a Taiwanese food documentary and some the films of Nigel Wingrove, who nobody's heard of because he was banned for years for talking trash about the Anglican Church. And so his movies are coming out, and so this is all a big delight for me. But, you know, who cares?
Well, I have to say, we've been doing this podcast for I don't know how long, Mac, and that's probably the most succinct thing anyone's ever said. So I appreciate that. So that's what's stated. Oh, wow. Okay. Mac, how about you?
Let's see, reviews. Yeah, I just finished up a review of the Blu-ray of Death Trap, which is the murder mystery with Michael Caine and Christopher Reeve.
So not related to the Seinfeld fake movie Death Blow.
No, sadly not. it's really good. It's a really good sort of great murder mystery, sort of a, you know, lots of plot twists and turns, and, you know, it's kind of, I described it as not so much a whodunit, but a who's gonna do it, because you're always wondering, like, which character is gonna outsmart which at any given time. So
it's a little bit like Sleuth in that regard.
It's a lot like Sleuth. Yeah, it was. In fact, they're both with Michael Caine, correct?
Right. Yeah.
And yeah. So yeah, because the whole action of the movie all takes place in the one house, so it's all very dependent on, you know, the dialogue and the acting. Directed by Sidney Lumet. Lumet? I never know that. I think it's Lumet. And he's great, of course. And so it's a really good movie. Definitely check it out.
All right. Nice. Eric?
This week I'm reviewing the Paradise Lost trilogy. This is the series of documentary films following the West Memphis Three, these three teenage boys who were arrested and convicted in the early 90s in Arkansas of murdering three 8-year-olds. And they were, these documentarians went down, for HBO and they shot the trial and everything that was going on, and they didn't really know what they were getting. And I think when they went down there, they were under the assumption that these guys, these boys were guilty. And as they went along, they realized, kind of documented how much, you know, these kids are being railroaded, and just to kind of, they assumed that because they listened to Metallica and had long hair and wore black clothes, that they were guilty. And despite a lack of evidence, they were sent two for life, and one was convicted to death. Sentenced to death. And because of that, the first movie, the first Paradise Lost, there sprung up this movement to free these boys, and so they went back 5 years later, filmed a second documentary, kind of catching up with the kind of support that these boys were getting. These no longer boys anymore; they're in their 20s, and the kind of the efforts to reopen the case and all the obstacles, and then finally, just a few years ago, they had their third documentary. Kind of catching up with what had happened 18 years after these kids went to jail and their eventual release. So it's a really, it's a fascinating story. I, you know, kind of knew of it peripherally, but hadn't really followed the specifics. So watching it all together, it's really one of the most effective and amazing documentaries I've seen, just not because of what the filmmakers do necessarily, but just because of you know, what they were able to capture and kind of being in the right place, and just the fact that they made these films that affected a real change, although real in the sense also that it's kind of messy and it doesn't end, I think, as cleanly as it would in a movie. I won't, you know, if you haven't seen it, I recommend watching it. I don't want to give anything away, but it's really raw and really really effective. It's the kind of thing I can see at some point Hollywood fictionalizing and doing a disservice to the story, because you can't tell it better than they do here with the real thing.
I'd seen the first two. I hadn't seen the third, but the first two are fascinating.
They really are.
But my real question is whether it's better than Joe Berlinger's masterpiece, Blair Witch 2.
Did he do Blair Witch 2?
Yeah.
Yikes.
That is that, because while I was watching the second one, I actually thought to myself, and this was like a random thought, I figure there's no way I can actually tie this into any, you know, anything I write or anything I say. But I thought, you know, this, if Blair Witch 2 had done it the way Paradise Lost 2 set up, because I watched Blair Witch 2 as part of the Scary Movie Month, and it was a terrible movie. It starts with a really interesting idea, which is, you know, what if, you know, the Blair Witch stuff was real, and it, you know, the movie came out, and this is the, you know, the outcry, and the, not the outcry, but the end result of that movie, people coming to Maryland, and people, you know, wanting to go on these tours. And that's an interesting idea to start a movie like that. And if they carried it through and made, like, another faux documentary, then it might have been interesting. But, how did I start talking about Blair Witch 2? Thanks,
Daryl. I don't know. I'm glad you
added, my fault.
Add some levity, because I was going to follow up your, you know, your sober analysis of that film with NBA and MLB all-time bloopers. I mean, bloopers suck. I loved them when I was growing up for some reason. But sports bloopers just suck. Especially
sports bloopers are the worst.
Baseball bloopers are football bloopers are the worst. I mean, because it's like, I mean, some guy lands on his head and almost separates his spinal column, and that's all you have to work with, you know?
But just add a slide whistle effect and you can sell a DVD.
Concussions, well. But baseballs are pretty bad too, because it's
just a guy's, the ball came out of a pitcher's hand weird.
Yes, that's right. Or two guys collide in the field. Or another guy jumps into the stands to save one, you know, to save a ball. Or, I don't know. These are the all-time bloopers. And the all-timers include, I mean, they do like this countdown. And the all-timers include some guy kicking a baseball, Jose Canseco getting hit in the head with a baseball.
That was funny, though.
See, you're part of the problem.
But I saw that when it happened. I was watching that game when it happened. So it was that was pretty funny.
I suppose the closest I'd laugh at a sports blooper is when we inevitably get the complete footage of Mark Sanchez running into the butt of the hockey line.
fumble
is really fantastic.
True blooper.
But actually, enough about the bloopers. I do have to quickly say that I've recently found a movie that has risen into the pantheon of just legendary B-movies, along with Gymkata, Flash Gordon, and Psycho Kickboxer. It's called Miami Connection. And it's on Blu-ray for some reason, which is kind of...
I've been hearing a lot about this.
Yeah.
It got a theatrical re-release, didn't it, recently? Or just limited, but...
It's from Draft House Films, so I don't know if you got...
Yeah, that's probably it.
Like in Draft House. But, yeah, so it's the mid-'80s.
And so this was actually made in the '80s. It's not like Draft House.
No, I have no patience for that kind of wannabe. This is legit, and they try really hard. That's why it's legend. You know, that's why it's great. It's not smirking. It's not a comedy. It's not self-aware. It is really trying to be a kick-ass action movie, and it fails spectacularly. Like Sanchez, it makes Sanchez's run look like an Adrian Peterson 50-yard touchdown dash. Here's a quick plot. The hottest band in Miami is called Dragon Sound. A bunch of college students and friends who live in the smallest house. There's like six of them, and they're in the smallest house ever. And they have a really tall mailbox for some reason. But they have this great band, and everyone loves them. But unfortunately, they bumped the previous house band out of a job. So irate, the house band gets like 60 street thugs on their side to go
pound these guys because they're so mad they lost their part-time job, right? So, but Dragon Sound, they sing about fighting ninjas and Taekwondo, but they actually walk the walk because they are Taekwondo experts. So they throttle the former house band. And the former house band, defeated, goes to the local Coke dealer and his gang, and asks for their help and says, if you help us beat up Dragon Sound, we'll join you. Which is kind of a lose-lose because I don't know why cause these guys suck. I don't know why the Coke dealer wanted it. But the guy jumps at it because the Coke dealer, the head guy, his sister is dating the lead guitarist of Dragon Sound. And for some reason that is not explained. He's not happy about this. So he jumps at this opportunity. But of course they end up, you know, they end up on the losing end of Dragon Sound's theatrics. So they go up one more level to the supplier. The Coke supplier gets involved in this, and they are a band of ninjas who ride on motorcycles and steal cocaine in the middle of the night from other cocaine dealers. So
does the lack of cocaine make Dragon Sound not sound like dragons?
All I know is there needs to have been more cocaine involved in this. This really is a legend. This is a movie that nothing I say will do justice to it.
I'll have to see that. This sounds horrible.
It's so horrible.
Now, Dave, this is also based on Tolstoy, right?
It is. Yes. It is. The songs are terrible. Like one song is called "Against the Ninja." They talk about evening the score against ninjas. And then another song is about, like, it's literally like the Friends Forever song that Zack Attack sang in Saved by the Bell. I mean, they're just thinking about Friends Forever. And they're full song. So it's like they just let these guys play for 3 minutes, you know, 3 to 4 to 5 minutes. I don't know. They're just full song.
You got to fill time somehow.
And then finally, again, you must all see this movie, but They had to change the ending. Like, a studio actually bought this movie. It was great listening to the commentary. The guy who kind of, the star and the guy who kind of pushed this movie was talking about how he brought this movie to festivals and tried to get it picked up, and everyone told him, like, quote, it was awful. You know, so he was kind of recounting how people just hated his movie. But the only reason someone bought it is if he changed up his ending. Because basically it ends with, like, the subplot in this movie is one of, like, the drummer, the keyboardist, finds out that his father, I forgot to say, all these guys are orphans.
So, clearly.
These guys are all orphans for some reason. But one of these guys realizes his father is still alive, and he connects with him. And so he's on his way to visit his father, and this is this crazy subplot that works out. But the ninjas attack, and in the original ending, they kill Jim. That's the guy. They kill him before they get his father. And the film ends with, like, the two guys consoling Jim as he dies, and they watch the airplane carrying his father land. And it, like, ends with a little title card that says, there will be peace on Earth when violence stops, or something like that.
That's one of them.
Wow. What was the What was the motorcycle movie that you reviewed?
There we go. That's my perfect segue. So this is, exactly what I was thinking. It is Silver Dream Racer. It is
with a little more context. If it just ended with, you know, at least you get the there will be peace on Earth message or something. There's nothing after.
Well, Silver Dream Racer is terrible because they just cut, like, the last 30 seconds, which changes the whole movie completely, you know. This one, they went back and they reshot the ending. So we'll just assume that the reshot one is the director's vision. But they couldn't afford to bring back the main bad guy ninja, so they got some guy who looks nothing like him. Different body type, different ethnicity, you know. Like, you decked him out in ninja clothes for a really lame fight, and everyone lives happily ever after, and so on and so. But it was
his chiropractor, I believe.
I believe so. Yeah. It was. I don't know. I just need to. Once again, I just need to emphasize how fantastic Miami Connection is. There's a whole sequence, another song called "Tough Guys," and they're just talking about tough guys. That's a song, and they just have stock footage of, like, Harley Davidson and Hell's Angels guys. Just, I don't know. I can't tell you how great this movie is.
Because Dave, important question.
Yes, important question. Go.
So, Miami Connection,
yeah,
or Voyage of the Rock Aliens?
See, as soon as Voyage of the Rock Aliens gets picked up somehow, and we know
that
pipe dream. I mean, it'll be in there. It'll be up there for sure.
I mean, like, you know, music, just music wise.
Music wise, nothing has eclipsed Voyage of the Rocky Islands.
Okay.
No.
All right, just checking.
Yeah, nothing will eclipse that. But yeah, so please, everyone, track down Miami Connection when it comes out. It'll be well worth your while. So, all right. That being said, Mac, take us onwards and upwards.
All right. We're going to take a look at what's coming out next week on DVD and Blu-ray, and you at home can follow along. We're going to go to DVDverdict.com, hit the DVD releases tab, and there we're going to scroll down and click on the link for the cover art gallery for December 18th and talk about what's on the list.
I'm not sure why Blue Lagoon needs another movie.
Oh, is this a remake? This
no, is... it apparently it's The Awakening. So.
Oh, Blue Lagoon, The Awakening.
Is this the Lifetime Channel Blue Lagoon that came
why,
out this year?
How could the Lifetime Channel be?
No, they did. They really worse. Did. I'm pretty sure it was the Lifetime Channel.
I'm sure you're right, but that makes it even worse.
The cover looks like the MTV version.
Yes, it
does. Yeah.
Yeah, for being stranded on an island, their hair looks great.
Yeah, it's, luckily we crashed with a UPS shipment of Aquanet.
The salt water makes my hair feathery.
Yes.
Well, I almost didn't see it the first time I looked down the list, but Flight of the Navigators gets Blu-ray. Blu-ray release.
Blu-ray, yeah.
That's great. So more another fantastic example of the evil of NASA.
Yes, well, absolutely.
Although the cover art for that just makes that kid look terrible.
That's rough.
Still be embarrassed.
That's pretty rough. Yeah, well, that cover art is terrible. Movie I was actually kind of interested in checking out, Premium Rush. Did anyone see that? It was Joseph Gordon-Levitt there.
I really wanted to see it. I heard a lot of interesting things about it.
Yeah.
But never got a chance. It sort of came and went from theaters really quickly.
Someone's sipping some scotch.
It's the only way to get through one of these things.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right.
I will say, if any of you haven't seen it, the remake of Total Recall is a complete waste of time.
It is. It's completely generic.
Horrible movie.
And totally forgettable as soon as you leave.
I can't imagine why they would have done it. I mean, outside of a money grab, but it just doesn't make sense. I mean, the original had basically everything you want out of a crappy action movie.
Mm-hmm.
It still holds up today. I would gladly watch Total Recall today. The Schwarzenegger movie. It's one of the best movies he did. So putting Colin Farrell in the role seems patently absurd to me.
No, this is a different movie too. I don't know. I mean, they shouldn't even call it Total Recall, to tell you the truth. I don't know.
Yeah. And I like Colin Farrell in the right role, like in something like In Bruges, where he's sort of allowed to play to his strengths. He can be really good. But this movie, he was kind of trying to do the sort of straight-laced action hero he was trying to do like a decade ago in The Recruit and things like that, and it's really dull.
Yeah. Gunmetal gray science fiction film. That's what I have time for. a funny show that I – The Life and Times of Tim. I find that a pretty funny HBO show.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe in small doses, but I do laugh.
We got 30th anniversary of Masters of the Universe. So.
Yeah, I looked that up. That's some like 22 discs worth of He-Man.
So it's I love this Masters of the Universe 30th anniversary on the Amazon listing, starring He-Man actor, Skeletor actor in parentheses.
You got to hand it to him for giving a damn about this about that show though, because going back and watching it again. It is pretty hard to like.
It's rough. It's rough.
The only thing that I take away from the old He-Man at this point is the PSA of Ram Man running his head into walls and He-Man admonishing us to not make fun of slow people.
Oh, boy. I don't know how I missed that, but I think every single episode of that. I need to try it. Oh, man.
That's horrible.
Yikes.
But that really stuck with me 15 years.
Oh, there you
25
go.
Years later. There you go. So there you go.
Maybe you do have a heart, after all.
At least for watching dumb men run their head into things.
Some Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle Blu-ray action.
Mm-hmm. Did anybody see Killer Joe? I was curious about it.
I'm curious about it too. I haven't seen it. It's William Friedkin.
Yeah.
It's apparently a very violent and strange movie, and so I'm interested to see it. But no, I have not. I do not know anything about it specifically.
Yeah, Friedkin's been so inconsistent, but he can still, you know, churn out a good movie when he wants to.
Yeah, he's a decent director. But you know, Matthew McConaughey, you know, is sort of a blockade for me sometimes. So, but he is supposed to be playing an actual Texan, so at least the accent will be right.
There you go. Hey, I don't know. Ever since Frailty, McConaughey's got my gratitude, because that was a pretty badass movie, Frailty.
I really liked him earlier this year in a movie called Bernie, too, that Richard Linklater directed with Jack Black. And I'm not a Jack Black fan at all, really, but it's really a good flick.
Nice. Well, you know what? I'm not. I see like maybe one possible inadvertently sleazy signed DVD, and it's Trouble with a Curve. So I don't know. I don't know if you guys think of anything else, but it seems like pretty straightforward stuff. So
I can always go with Here's Lucy.
There you go. That's not too bad.
I was going to go with A Gifted Man.
Yeah, there's that.
There you go. It's good.
I went back to Premium Rush.
Yeah. All right. Maybe there's more there.
We got it all.
Dave, any
I underestimated your ability to squeeze sophomore humor out of it.
Dave, you know, any of these titles could be sleazy if you say them the right way.
Yeah, official documentary.
Arbitrage.
Arbitrage, yes.
We're going to have to get the explicit tag now. Total. No.
Okay, let's move on to our ambush topics. You know how this works on Talk Story. Tell the Mac, why don't you kick us off?
All right. First topic is underground lakes.
I'm gonna go right to what I've been watching, Lord of the Rings.
Thanks,
the beginning of Two Towers, when Gandalf and the Balrog go straight down into the underground lake.
That's right.
The mines of Moria. That's a thing, right? Did I say that correctly? Did I say that correctly? Moria?
Yep.
All right.
Got it.
Tuesdays with Moria. Is this a thing?
The first thing that comes to mind for me is The Descent.
Oh, damn it. Yeah.
Not so much maybe a pond more than a lake, but...
It's a pond, but still, that was
my... Yeah, it's pretty memorable.
It's good.
I'm sorry, Daryl.
That's all right. It happens.
They're burning through underground lakes. I'm having a hard time. Let's see. Oh man, so that's a cove in the Goonies. Yeah. So I probably couldn't get away with a little pool at the wishing well, huh, Mac? Huh?
Maybe if you stretch it a little, yeah.
Well, because they actually go swimming in it. They submerge themselves in it.
That's true.
That's Mouth's probably the height of his dickitude in that show, right?
No.
I couldn't quite get his argument there. You know, why he was stealing all the money, or actually why Andy cared so much, right? Andy was like, these are people's dreams, right?
Right.
Well, in her culture, coins actually do, steal people's souls.
That's true. That's possible. And what was the name of the jock jerk there, Andy's boyfriend?
Oh, his name.
Quick. Here you go. Can you do it? Quick.
Alan, Andy. How's his name?
Troy is Troy.
Troy, wow. That's a good one.
I was always shocked that he didn't realize when he was pulling the bucket up it was just a sweater and not a full shirt. Just a little thing that stuck.
He was surprisingly weak.
He was surprisingly weak, yeah. Maybe Troy that was anemic or something. All right, Daryl, you're on the spot.
Oh, I'm trying to think. I think I've got one. I'm just trying to make sure that I have the right name.
Look, if I can say the pool at the Goonies.
They chose a wishing well. Pretty much as long as there's more than an inch of water.
Yes, that's considered a lake.
It's a cannibal movie. clearly. damn it. What is the name of that movie? I think it's Jungle Holocaust. We're going to say it's Jungle Holocaust because nobody really cares.
When it comes to cannibal movies, just say the word.
Also known as Last Cannibal World. where the
making stuff up. This is great.
Yeah. where the main white person who's been captured by the cannibals is caged right next to an underground stream, and that's the best I can do.
Right. You know what? You could have said underground lake, and nobody.
Yeah, there were a whole bunch of underground lakes in that movie.
It was a Citizen Kane of underground lake movies. Really?
In fact, that was one of the main criticisms of Jungle Holocaust. Too many underground lakes.
I remember Pauline Kael said.
That's right. Too many underground lakes, yeah. Pauline Kael was a real stickler about this stuff.
Underground lakes was just over the top.
She had a real problem with cannibal movies in general. I've never forgiven her.
All right, well,
Max, save us.
I think we're what your underground lake is.
All right. Well, first of all, none of you guys thought of Dragon Slayer, which is like the best underground lake because the fire is spurting up through the water and all that. But actually, for mine, this is how exciting my life is. The other day, I watched Scooby-Doo meets Batman.
That's very exciting.
And that has the extended scene in the underground lake where they're trying to find, because Joker and Penguin have teamed up and they've got an evil plot brewing, and the Scooby gang are trying to find out what their plot is, and leads to the underground lake where there's not one but several monsters keep popping up out of the lake and scaring Shaggy and Scooby, including a monster made out entirely of purple water that like swishes around and floats around. And so they spend a lot of time in this underground lake trying to figure out what's trying to cross the lake and not being able to and getting scared from whatever's going on in the lake. And it turns out to be completely inconsequential. Because the Joker and Penguin's plot is actually to go to this warehouse to steal the flying jetpack, and then I rule the world apparently. And,
yeah. And
so, just like the Dark Knight.
Yeah.
Right. And so all that business, all that time spent in the underground lake had nothing to do with anything.
Wow, well, just goes to show you that cliche is where the underground lake is a narrative crutch.
I guess so. Pauline Kael must have been right.
That's right. That is a crutch. All right, good. Daryl, why don't you go next?
I have two. I'm going to go with old cartoons that you may or may not want to see remade into a live-action picture.
I know. Okay, easy one for me. I think we've talked about this before, but Turbo Teen.
Right.
Yeah. Right. The kid who we've talked about this, but the kid driving his convertible on a dark, stormy night through a mountain range, he goes flying off and lands in a secret laboratory, gets zapped with an experimental ray that melds the boy to the car. And whenever he gets hot and sweaty, he turns, in a very painful-looking process, by the way, into a convertible.
Manda convertible sounds like a really...
It is, and just as the PSA of Ram Man with special needs sticks out to you, the horrifying vision of this kid's mouth opening wide and turning into a fender, and his legs bending backwards, not unlike that previous ambush topic where we talked about limbs bending. He's looked like the arrival here, and his haunches turning into taillights. Yeah, that's pretty rough. And so, I just remember scenes where he would like do push-ups and sit-ups and stuff to get himself hot and bothered to turn into this. You know, so, just I can't quite see that as a live action, but hey, you never know.
A really short-lived cartoon that I really enjoyed when I was a kid and is somewhat forgotten these days was Inch High Private Eye.
Oh, yeah. I gotcha.
And, which you'd think with all the special effects and stuff, that'd be a no-brainer for a big blockbuster movie, right? It's just, you have he's an inch tall, he solves crimes, and he gets into all kinds of scrapes. So I was wondering, where's that movie, Spend $200 million on that.
Does he have a side? Does he have a regular size sidekick?
I think so. He must. I'm trying to remember it. Yeah, because he had some kind of supporting cast that was like his detective agency. Maybe it was the fact that his trench coat is bright yellow. Maybe that's what's holding the movie back.
Yeah, probably. Sure.
They can't even afford trees in movies these days. Can't afford yellow.
That's right.
I'm going to go with a show. I must have been on Nickelodeon. It was a European show, maybe French, you know, dubbed, called, I think it was called The Mysterious Cities of Gold.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. You know, that one is like a, you know, the, it kind of got a great theme song. I think I actually tracked it out on Netflix recently. And I don't remember what happened in the show. I just remember loving the idea of searching for El Dorado and all that kind of stuff. I'm pretty much a sucker for any kind of, like, you know, ancient treasure hunt.
Yeah, I guess so. All right.
Where the ancient treasure isn't, you know, alien skulls. For example.
Yeah. Not naming any names.
I'm going to go with a kind of obscure one. When I was a kid, I was raised in a pretty religious household, and we used to watch this cartoon called Superbook. And I don't know if any of you have ever heard of this Superbook. And it's done in kind of this – it was animated in Japan, and it's this boy and this girl and their talking robot sidekick. And they have a copy of the Bible that's a time travel machine.
I think I'm close. I think I'm with you here. They go back into, like, biblical, like, right. New Testament times.
Right? And they, like, jump into the book and time travel and have crazy adventures with their robot.
I think I'm with you. Yeah.
So, as a kid, I was always curious as to what that would be like with a bigger budget. So,
wow. Fantastic.
There you go.
Wow. Like Mel Gibson.
That's very good.
That's very good.
That is very good.
All right. I'm going with an old favorite of mine, Thundar the Barbarian.
Oh, he's sweet.
Yeah. that with its super science and sorcery and with all of the effects these days and everybody's love of Conan and all of that business could clearly be made into a ridiculous, horrible movie, and I just can't understand why they've never done it.
Who would you get to play Thundar, though?
Who would you get to play Thundar?
Yeah, the casting.
His name?
Is it the man for ants or Dwayne Johnson these days?
Well, Dwayne, but, you know. what's his name? The guy that played Thor.
Oh.
Hemsworth?
Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah, Chris Hemsworth is who I'd probably get.
Great, that guy's typecast for the rest of his life.
Yeah. The question is who you get to play Ook the Mock.
Who is Ukthamak?
That's
his Chewbacca.
That, oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's basically Chewbacca. So you've got Thundar, you've got his Chewbacca, and then you've got Princess Ariel, who I'm not sure was ever really a princess. And so, you know, Chris Hemsworth, some hot lady, and somebody playing essentially a Chewbacca.
Sounds like
you know that this is eventually going to be a straight-to-DVD WWE production.
Yes. Oh, I wish. I'd buy it. I would not buy that.
You should get in touch with Zach Galifianakis' people. I think you might have interest.
All right. I will go next. Well, my beloved New York Knicks are enjoying their best start to a season in 42 years. So that's kind of emblematic of how rough it's been for the past 42 years. But so in honor of them, just memorable, bad or good, doesn't make a difference, basketball scenes.
I think I'll have to go to Teen Wolf.
You should. That's
of course some great, you know, that's a weird movie. Rewatching that is a weird movie. It's essentially about a kid who's only popular when he becomes an animal and a girl that he likes who I guess is into bestiality. I'm not really sure. That's kind of a weird thing. But yeah, he's great at basketball. No one cares that he's a werewolf.
But it's quite obvious that Michael J. Fox is not great at basketball.
No, he's not. No, the dust mop they got to stunt double.
That's right. But like in the end, when he loses his Teen Wolf powers.
Right.
I just remember he's like very sweaty. He's like shooting free throws. He's just super sweaty. I also remember his best friend had a shirt on that said like "I'm with dickhead" or I just don't remember the word "dickhead" was in it. That's one of my favorite 80s colloquialisms.
That's not a great movie.
It's not.
For some reason, the basketball scene at the end reminds me of something from Hang Time. For some reason, it seems like it's you know, like it's the short court or something. I don't know, something weird.
Yeah.
I'll go with Alien Resurrection. intriguing basketball scene in there, which at that point in the series, what else were they going to do?
You know, I mean, the thing about basketball is hard to fake, like, on screen. Like, you can tell someone sucks at basketball, you know?
How come I didn't go? I didn't go. Why didn't I go with Air Bud? Can I change my
Air Bud?
That's my favorite movie.
I know, that was a layup.
Well, it's my favorite dog playing basketball movie, but it's the dog can play basketball, Dave. Plays basketball.
No, you can't fake that.
You can't fake that.
No, the dog actually plays basketball.
I know he does.
The dog is sick. The dog is sick.
The dog is sick.
Sick?
Yeah, oh, I can't believe sick at basketball.
Oh yeah.
That was a layup for you. I can't believe you missed that. Man. That was a softball. That was a meatball. That would have been like favorite diminutive actor, Ashton of me. And, you know.
Man, what's wrong with me?
We'll pocket that one. We'll get back to it some other time.
I did recall watching the Alien Resurrection special features and seeing something on there where they said that apparently Sigourney Weaver, she does this shot where she throws the ball over her shoulder and hits it from some absurd distance, and that she really did that.
All right.
And they've basically spent the rest of the day cheering. But,
good.
Yeah.
It was only like on the third or fourth take, right?
What's that?
It was only like on the third or fourth take, right?
I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, I don't believe that, no matter what they say.
Oh, you're just that's because you're a hater.
Because I'm a hater, because I'm a cynical hater.
You're a cynical hater, yeah. All
right, so I'm going to go with it's a movie from about 79 or 80 called The Visitor, about an alien-possessed little girl, which has nothing to do with basketball, except the first 15 minutes are essentially a real-time scene of the Atlanta Hawks playing basketball. It makes no sense for anything in the movie except the girl who's possessed is walking around the stands and she winds up possessing somebody. But other than that, it's basically just straight up something off of ESPN. and it's the Hawks, and you know it's what it is. They're not faking playing basketball, at least I can say that. But it's the start of the movie, and it's not exactly a harbinger of a quality flick.
Yeah.
So they didn't even bother to write fake songs to fill time.
No, they just showed some basketball.
That reminds me of Rock and Roll Nightmare, I believe it's called, the Canadian heavy metal horror movie that opens
with speaking of musical horror.
Yeah, that opens with like 15 minutes of a van driving, like just a van driving. All right, well, I'm going to go with, you know, let me tell you, speaking of who in real life is probably terrible at basketball, John Stamos. I think he is terrible at basketball because in this episode of Full House, which is like the perfect microcosm of Full House episodes. But it's there's a 3-on-3 fundraising basketball tournament reffed by Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and with one team is just some random guys, and the other team is Uncle Jesse and Uncle Joey and you know Bob Saget, Danny, right? So the first unbelievable thing is like they packed out the stands. People paid money to see a 3-on-3 game starring these guys.
Danny was a local news guy.
Yeah, I guess so.
Right?
Yeah, local news guy. So you had the guy with the public access wake up show. Right? you had a member of a failed rock band, and you had a struggling comedian on the local circuit. But that was enough to draw. But John Stamos was, you know, Uncle Jesse's so terrible, and he was beginning to feel self-conscious because he was sucking so bad, and he didn't want to do bad in front of his two twin boys.
So this is after the twins?
After the post-twins.
Okay, that's when the show really goes off the rails.
As we Full House fans like to say, this is A.T. after So he's desperate to not look like a complete tool bag in front of his twins, so he enlists Kareem Abdul-Jabbar to help him. And Abdul-Jabbar just finds his sweet spot. If he just stands like in the elbow area to shoot, he will always make it. And obviously, he hits it just in time, and he wins the game. Obviously,
brutal.
It is rough. It was a rough episode, but it supplied me with this topic. Fantastic. So, Eric, why don't you go next?
All right, I'm going with TV cast shakeups.
Well, I'm going to go simple with the inclusion of Leonardo DiCaprio into the Growing Pains household.
Yes. Was that permanent, or did he just guest star?
No, he was in. It was. I think it was the last season, but it was. He was in like 10 or 12 episodes.
Oh, okay.
He became the blonde kid's roommate, and he was a rough kid from the streets and all that.
Right.
You know, doing drugs and carrying a knife. And made some real drama for that last episode.
Totally.
Rough stuff. Ooh, rough that stuff. Guy.
I'm going to go with the reverse of yours, the unexplained disappearance of the youngest sister in Family Matters.
Oh, yeah.
She just eventually disappeared. So apparently family does not matter as much as originally thought.
I'll go with what I've been watching this week, the second season of Star Trek The Next Generation, where actually two of the central female characters from the first season are gone. Denise Crosby's Tasha Yar is out, and Dr. Beverly Crusher leaves for the entirety of that season and is replaced with the more hard-edged Dr. Pulaski.
So what was the behind-the-scenes reason for that, for Gates leaving?
Apparently, both actresses were unhappy with the manner in which their roles were being written, and rumor has it that Gene Roddenberry was responsible for much of that because he had a pretty big hand in what was going on in terms of the scripts during those early seasons.
And the original Star Trek was way female-centric.
Yeah, so two of their three central female characters left, and then and one of them had requested to be killed off, and so she was gone for good. But nobody really liked the new character,
Pulaski.
Dr. Pulaski. Yeah, and so apparently the fans sort of petitioned to get Dr. Crusher back, and she did return for the remainder of the series in season three. And Pulaski went off to her next assignment, wherever that was.
I do have to say, I have to say, Gates is a great first name, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
Although, is that her real first name? I want to say her real name is Cheryl or something.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, she just was scanning the backyard one day and said,
the only reason I say that is because I was watching some of the behind-the-scenes footage reviewing this Blu-ray, and there's an old interview with her, and it says Cheryl McFadden.
Oh, wow.
And so either they just made up Cheryl because they thought Gates was too silly for or that's not her real name. I don't know.
Let's see. For me, in its fifth season, just before it got canceled, 21 Jump Street went through a huge cast change.
Yes, good one, yes.
Johnny Depp was gone off to his film career, and there was like a stretch of, I think, just two episodes where there were these two guys.
Well, Peter DeLuise hung on for a little bit.
Yeah.
Because his little brother was in that.
That's right. But there was a lot of craziness because people were just coming and going throughout that whole season.
Yeah.
It's like they introduced these two guys and said, these are the new guys. And two episodes later, they were gone. Then there were two other new guys, and then they were the new guys for the rest of the season. So
I believe like the main guy who replaced Depp, his name was like Michael Bandetti or something.
Oh, that's right.
And according to Peter DeLuise's commentary on one of those episodes, I guess he's got a very successful business with a mobile, like you driving around mobile screens, like mobile theater screens in Hollywood.
Doesn't sound very successful.
So he says he's extraordinarily successful, so you should don't badmouth Michael Bandetti's screen. Yeah, that was a great, crazy season. We've talked about that as much with all the Satan worship stuff. You want to talk about messaging, Daryl. There's a lot of messaging in turn.
Yes, torn from today's headlines.
Torn from today's headlines, yes.
The other big one from that I probably should have mentioned, that I probably should have used, was the rotating Becky's on Roseanne.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is pretty ridiculous.
They were self-aware about that stuff too.
Eventually they were, yeah. But the idea that they couldn't just make a decision about which one was going to play Becky eventually was patently absurd. Or just send her to college like the Cosbys did with Lisa Bonet.
Yeah. All right.
Is it up to me? All right. Well, couple shows that I've been watching recently, a couple British shows, and I usually think of, I don't know, there being kind of a consistent level of quality or just consistency in British shows that maybe they don't have, but I've been watching the fourth seasons of Misfits and Being Human, and in both of those shows, by the time the fourth season is underway or over, the entire main cast is gone, replaced by other people. It's the weirdest thing. Like both the shows, I guess semi spoilers for Being Human. By the time we get to end of season four of Being Human, they have a whole new ghost, werewolf, and vampire. Aren't even the ghost, werewolf, and vampire.
Is it explained? I mean, is there?
Oh yeah, it's all okay. Part of the. Yeah, it's like, gotcha. I mean, it's not like it's just like it's not Darren on Bewitched or something. Yeah. It makes sense. And then on Misfits, kind of over these seasons, like one guy left and he was replaced by someone else, and then a couple other characters left, and so they brought a couple other people on, and someone else is just gone for some reason, like in between seasons, and now it's just there's just new people, and it's I'll keep checking it out because I kind of like the show, but it's very weird. I'm trying to think of any American series where they flat out replaced everybody.
Everybody?
I mean, basically everyone. Well, yeah, I think in both of those shows, everyone who was in the early seasons is gone, and they're all new people.
Soup to Nuts, maybe the Airwolf, the final season of Airwolf. I think totally cleaned house. Okay. Yeah, I mean, they couldn't even afford to get a stunt double for Ernest Borgnine's back. That's how bad it was.
The man's back could act.
The man's back was a good act. But you know, another honorable mention for me was Dukes of Hazzard. Right, those two
years.
Douchebags.
Oh man, yeah.
I remember those guys?
It's like they were Zach and Chance.
They were unceremoniously dumped. Too. Like, I remember the premiere episode of the next season. You know, Bo and Luke show up again, and then those two guys just drive off and. Those are two good Duke boys.
And what's funny is the cartoon, the Hanna-Barbera cartoon, uses them instead of Bo and Luke.
Yeah.
Oh, and that is some garbage.
You don't say. The Hanna-Barbera Duke's Hazzard cartoon that uses the fake cousins are garbage. That's shocking. Breaking news all over the place in this edition of Friday Cold Lesson. All right, so yeah, thanks, Daryl. This joined by the fact that you reviewed a French horror movie that no one's ever heard of, or an Italian horror movie.
Italian, by the way.
We are paving.
Let's keep it straight.
We are charting new territory in this edition. All right, Clark, it's up to you to wrap this up.
All right, a pretty simple one. I'm going to go with bad trailers for good movies.
Wow, I got to start to think about this now. Okay, first thing that pops up, like bad trailers. I'm thinking good trailers for bad movies. All right, bad trailers for good movies.
All right, I'm going to go with Drive. The trailers for Drive basically set it up as a movie that was going to be like Fast and the Furious. A bunch of racing and a bunch of action. And which I have no interest in, really. And when I finally actually went out and saw it, it's an action movie, obviously, but has the sort of existential business that old, like, 80s European action had, and is just, to me, just a gorgeous movie, and is nothing. And, of course, the producers were sued by somebody about the false advertisement of it not being the Fast and the Furious. But the fact that I looked at the trailers and saw some crappy action and saw the movie and saw something that was really gorgeous to me pretty much takes it.
Yeah, you're definitely onto something there. I remember when I saw that one in the theater, I fell in love with it, but most of the other people in the theater seemed pretty disgruntled. When it was over,
it's a bunch of shots of Ryan Gosling's eyes in a rear view mirror. You know, but that's the beauty of the movie. I mean, that's what's so great about it. But yeah, I don't think that the people who went out to see it, and there were a lot of people who went out to see it when it first came out, that assumed they were getting something high action, and they got something very slow with like. Maybe 8 or 9 seconds of serious violence.
Yeah.
And that violence is serious.
And it's not like the sort of, you know, blood-pumping, crowd-pleasing violence either. It's really unnerving stuff for the most part.
It's rough. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really rough. And a gorgeous movie. One of my favorite movies in the last 5 or 6 years. The trailer completely misrepresented that. Whether that's lawsuit-worthy or not is really not my business. But
this is America. So, yes, it was. I can't remember. I must have seen some sort of trailer for it. I'm going to go with the original Toy Story. For some reason, knowing nothing about it, I thought it was going to be just a dumb kids movie. And so when I watched it just sort of randomly, I was blown away by how good it was because I did not know what to expect. I guess I wasn't paying attention. But probably whatever, you know, teasers or trailers I saw for it, I just assumed it was going to be stupid. I mean, it was, you know, this was at the age when I was probably more cynical and snarky in college age and stuff. before I gave myself over to all things childlike and wonderful.
Ah, man, I'm really struggling with this. I'm trying to think, and I love watching trailers. So, I mean, I can get the reverse. I can give you a great trailer with that's a great movie.
Yeah, there's some great trailers.
You're gonna pull another wishing well, aren't you?
I want to so bad. That is my wish. My mouth is staking. I can't do it. Like, old trailers were terrible. Like, weren't they? Like, old trailers? They just, compared to how they're made now. I just remember...
It's voiceover now.
A lot of voiceover these days.
But the voiceover that... Like, I vaguely remember... Of course I'm going here, but, like, the trailer for Willow, you know? I just remember it was being so, like, hackneyed, and the announcer was... Just really serious, like he was announcing an NCAA basketball game, you know, and just didn't fit with anything. That's all I got. Like, just random. I mean, I knew it was going to be cool because there was a dragon and stuff, you know, and I was 10 years old, so of course, you know, sign me up. But, you know, watching it on the DVD here, it's like, boy, old trailers sucked, you know?
A lot of those older trailers are like, 4 30-second clips sort of awkwardly strung together.
That's right. They're just kind of like, it's like footage just kind of crammed together.
Yeah.
And hopefully, maybe something more specific will jump at me, but that's my installment right now.
Yeah, I guess for mine would be a similar one. If you ever go back and watch that very first original trailer for Star Wars back in 76, it's very weird. It doesn't look like a movie trailer even from that time. And instead of the Mr. Movie voice that we always hear, it's this, like, really sort of person's, like, real sort of flat-speaking voice. So he's, like, saying, Star Wars. It is a science fiction motion picture adventure.
This is Star Wars. It's a movie. Might pay or not. Your choice.
It's the story of a boy, a girl, and a galaxy. Go see Star Wars at a theater near you.
Or not. My apathy.
It's your money. Clearly, do what you want with it. All right. You got to have something specific in mind, Clark.
Actually, the thing that inspired this, taking a cue from Eric and Pixar, the trailer for the 3D re-release of Finding Nemo, which... Finding Nemo, I think, is a really lovely movie. One of Pixar's best efforts, really heartwarming and surprisingly complex. And the new trailer for the 3D version basically takes all of the cutesy toilet humor from that movie and jams it into 2 minutes and makes it look like a movie filled with nothing but underwater fart jokes. And it was such like a disappointing disservice to that movie. Although, for all I know, it'll be more effective in getting kids to return to it. But.
Although, what you just described sounds like a pretty awesome movie.
Underwater so fart jokes.
Underwater fart jokes.
So many bubbles.
So many bubbles. Pixar presents so many bubbles. Finding Nemo 2, so many bubbles. Oh, boy. Well, on that really highbrow note, let's end this edition of the Friday Filibusters. So, Clark, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Good to have you on board. We'll have to do this again sometime. Mac, Eric, and Daryl, thank you as always. Friday Filibuster at dvdverdict.com is our email address. Mac, wrap us up.
You all still have Zoidberg.